Well, hi, everybody. It's Phil Farr, and time for another edition of Blind Like Me. We're running a rerun show today, and let me tell you why. I had an Outlook Express crash and lost my guest folder, so anyone who had suggested or agreed to be a guest on the show, their address is lost. What I'm trying to tell you is I need guests for the show. It's very easy. All you have to do is email me, phil@philparr.net, and we'll schedule you sometime in the next couple of weeks for the show. As I said, Outlook Express crashed and lost that entire folder. So if you had planned to be a guest or if you'd like to be a guest, email me, phil@philparr.net. Love to have you. We chose a show from about 2 years ago with a delightful lady from Stanton, Virginia. I don't know if you remember her or not, but here she is. Her name is Phyllis Campbell. Phyllis Campbell, no kin to Dale Campbell, are you?
No.
No. But we did hear about you through Dale Campbell. Dale has the cooking in the dark list, which we're kind of affiliated with, you, and you had written him some email, and he said, this lady would make a wonderful guest for you on You're Blind Like Me, so here we are all together. And you're in Virginia? What part of Virginia?
I'm in Stanton, Virginia. This is Woodrow Wilson's birthplace, and for those of you who like country music, this is the home of the Statlers.
The Statler Brothers in
yes.
Stanton, their office building is in Stanton, Virginia.
Right, it sure is.
I love the Statler Brothers.
Well, this is the home of the Statlers, and when Lou DeWitt was with the Statlers, he is now deceased. Lou and I knew each other when we were kids.
Really?
I have sung with Lou when, you know, we were both children, and I had no idea that Lou would ever be famous.
So you're a singer also?
Yes. I'm more of a pianist than an organist. I am a church organist, and I teach piano to the visually impaired.
Now, did you ever hear this album that the Statlers did that was the spoof on the old country music radio show? They called it the Road Hog album. You may not.
Yes.
I finally got that on CD. It is just, if you are my age and you remember all those old country radio shows, it is just, to me, hilarious.
It is hilarious. Well, I suspect I am your age.
Well, I'm 64.
Oh, my goodness, I'm older than you are. I will be 67 in December.
67. Well, it's wonderful that we're living this long, isn't it?
Everybody else is getting older but me, because I will see these kids that were just children when I had junior choir in this little church, and hear these kids married with children of their own expecting grandchildren. And
yeah.
I think, how could they be that old? I'm not that old.
So you remember World War II, don't you?
Yes. I remember World War II. In fact, I am also a writer, as I think you know.
Yeah.
And my book, Friendships in the Dark, starts out, the first chapter deals with the idea of the war that pray God will end all wars.
Yeah, and that's what they thought at that time, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did.
Now, what is the name of your book again? Let's get into that.
I have two of them, actually.
Really?
My first one was a romance called Come Home, My Heart. And it deals with a young blind woman, a young woman to start the book, who had always wanted to be a doctor. All her life she'd wanted to be a doctor, specifically an obstetrician. And just before she finished her residency in OBGYN, she developed a brain tumor, and she lost her sight as a result. They were able to remove the tumor, but she lost her sight. And this little book is just the story of how she adjusted to her blindness and how she developed a new career and, of course, how she fell in love. It's a nice little book for the ladies. I don't know how many of the gentlemen in your audience would like it, but It is available through NLS. They have just done it, as a matter of fact, both on cassette and in Braille. Those of you who get Web Braille, you can get it off Web Braille. That, oddly enough, was my first book, which was done originally in hardcover, and just a couple years ago, it was done in large print by Thorndike Press, and was recently put into the NLS system.
So
my most recent book, for writing, the original book, is Friendships in the Dark, which is autobiographical. It's something I would never in this world have written, except that my editor asked me to write it. And it deals with my life, and the friendships in the dark are mostly the animals that I have had. I think her husband, my editor's husband, picked the title. But it tells about the first cat I owned and my dog guide, Lear, and the dog who belonged to the superintendent at the school for the blind when I was a student. And it was done in hardcover. Then it was done in paperback by St. Martin's Press. It's been done in large print. It's been done in Chinese, if you please,
really?
And done in the United Kingdom. I believe the United Kingdom release was large print, and it too is in the NLS system, both cassette and Braille.
But now you have, this book wasn't really written, it wasn't written for blind people, it was written as a fictional book, both books,
The
right?
first one was
first
a fictional
one, yeah.
book, just written, there again, an editor suggested this. She said, I feel that people relate to stories. She said, you can see a lot of blind people walking down the street, but she said, people sort of relate to stories. And I would like for the public to read a book about a young blind woman who has lost her sight. Can you do a fictional book? And I said, well, I'll try. And I did. This was done through Avalon Books, and the editor at that time then opened up her own publishing house, and when she did this, she wrote and asked if I would write the autobiographical book, which eventually became Friendships in the Dark. And of course, this too was written for the sighted public.
Yeah.
But a lot of blind people have told me that they have related to both books.
Now, how did this editor know about you? Had you written some things for magazines before?
Oh, I have written for magazines since the 60s. I have written, some of your listeners probably will be familiar with me through Dialogue, because I did quite a few things for Dialogue. And
yeah.
I've written for the little publication that the Salvation Army puts out. I've written for an inspirational magazine called Sunshine Magazine. I have written for the Christian Herald. And I've even written for the so-called confession magazines, kind that the kids used to hide under the blanket.
Mm-hmm.
True experience and true romance. And by the way, a lot of those stories are written by fiction writers who may be the first one I wrote for them. I saw a piece in a newspaper about a child who had been kidnapped. And they didn't know what had happened to her, really. And I got my what-if juices moving and thought, well, what if this child surfaces again about 10 years later? And
okay.
I wrote the story, and they bought it. And, of course, I explained to them that it was not something that actually happened to me, but that I had read a piece in the newspaper which inspired it. So I've written for a number of those publications. And as I say, a lot of your people may remember me from seeing my name in Dialogue.
And that's how you happened to have an editor interested in your work.
I had submitted another piece of work to Ms. Brett, Barbara Brett, at Avalon Books, and she wasn't interested in what I presented to her, but she was interested in my writing. She liked my writing style, so she suggested that I do Come Home My Heart, which is the fictional book about the blind woman who was a doctor.
Now, you've been doing this for a long time. So do you have any? You have no sight at all, do you?
No.
Some? How did you write before? Do you write with a computer now, word processor, computer?
I use Microsoft Word.
Yeah, and how did you write before that?
Oh, my dear, you don't want to know.
Yes, I do want to know.
I must have, let me tell you,
okay.
Those editors either felt real sorry for me, or I was a better typist than I thought I was. I did my original copy in Braille. The very first piece I ever sold, I did with a slate and a stylus. It was only about 3 pages, thank the Lord. I would do it in Braille, and then I would type it for submission to the publishers. I never have had a proofreader. I've just always trusted that I wouldn't make too many mistakes, and evidently I didn't.
And so you were just typing on a typewriter?
Right.
And you really didn't know what you were doing. If you made a mistake, you were really in trouble.
Yeah, well, I am a fairly good typist. The worst problem I had was interruptions.
Yeah.
Because if you're interrupted, you've forgotten what you wrote. What I always did when I got to the bottom of a page, before I moved that page out, I made a note in Braille, the last sentence that I wrote on that page, and the first sentence that I was ready to write on the next page. And then I pulled the page and started. That way, if you got lost, you would know how to start the page you got lost on.
You'd have some reference point.
Right.
You really would. Well, that must have been tough. Computers have just opened up so many things for us.
Oh, they really and truly have.
Of course, there are blind people who still resist them, but by golly, they're here to stay. They aren't going anywhere.
They're not going away.
I hope they don't.
They better not.
Let's get back to your childhood. You were born where?
I was born in Amherst County, Virginia. The closest city that people might relate to is Lynchburg.
Now, was this a rural setting?
Yes, my father was a farmer. And we lived on a farm when I was a little girl. When I was about 6 or 7, we moved here, and Daddy took a job at Western State Hospital, which still is the mental hospital for the western part of the county. Of the state. And I have a blind sister. And we both attended the School for the Blind, which is located here in Stanton. And Mom and Daddy wanted to be close to the school. Daddy also realized that for the small farmer, even then, that he could not make the living for his family, that he felt he wanted to continue on the farm. So that's why he made the move.
Now, this was early 40s.
Yes.
So even back then, he realized that small farms were...
Well, he realized it wasn't for him because he only had one son, and my brother went into service, World War II, and he realized that he no longer wanted to go to the farm. He said, when I get out of the service, I won't be coming back to the farm. And so my father just realized that to have to hire help and this kind of thing, that it
wasn't going to pay, was it?
And it had to be, of course, it's only since I've become an adult that I realized what a hard thing that was for both of my parents to leave what they had always known and always done But they did, and I think they were contented doing it.
Now, you had a blind sister, and then you had this one brother who could see.
Well, I had my blind sister is 7 years older than I am, but we've always been like twins. We've just been so very close. Then we have another sister who is 7 years older than she, who can see, and my brother, who has been dead almost 10 years, had sight. So the last two in the family were blind, and the first two had sight.
No one knows why. Is there any?
Well, there's been quite a bit of speculation. The old country doctor who brought us into the world said, and we were later told the same thing, that the optic nerve did not develop properly. We were both premature. We were born at home, so oxygen had nothing to do with it. But they felt that the optic nerve simply did not develop.
But no one really knows what happened.
Well, then someone, doctor speculated it was RP, but
yeah.
There was no history of RP anywhere. So who knows? I only know I'm blind as a bat, and that's fine.
Nothing you can do about it.
Said
brother and his sister that could see, and a sister that couldn't see, and then you. So four children.
That's right.
And they were really spaced pretty much apart.
Well, I think there were supposed to have been others that didn't survive.
Yeah. That was pretty common back then.
It was pretty common
stillborn
back
children.
Then.
My mother, I think, had two or three stillborn children, and then I had an older brother that was blind. He was 10 years older than me. That's no longer with us. He taught me a lot of things. Taught me how to smoke and drink.
Oh my stars! Well, my sister didn't. She taught me Braille. You see?
Yeah, she was a good sister. Listen, we're going to take a little short break, and we want to talk about your experience at the Virginia School for the Blind. Phyllis Campbell is our guest. Back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Campbell and Cheryl Cummings for a special recording of Cooking in the Dark during this year's Blind Handyman and Cooking Weekend 2 gathering, November 3rd through the 6th at the Intercontinental Sheraton, 15700 John F. Kennedy Boulevard. Registration is only $25 per person, and special room rates are available under the name Blind Handyman Gathering. Don't miss out on the excitement of the Blind Handyman and Cooking Weekend 2 gathering. Contact Phil Parr at 936-634-9500 for all the details. Gathering November 3rd through the 6th at the Sheraton Hotel, 15700 John F. Kennedy Boulevard. Look for seminars, singing, dancing, recordings of the Blind Handyman, Cooking in the Dark, and Blind Like Me programs, as well as a chance to just get away, relax, and enjoy yourself. Special room rates under the name Blind Handyman Gathering are available at the Sheraton. Make plans to join your friends again for the Blind Handyman and Cooking Weekend 2 Gathering. Call 281-442-5100.
Color Blind Like Me, Phyllis Campbell from Virginia is our guest, and you went to the Virginia School for the Blind.
Right. Actually, to be accurate, it's the Virginia School for the Deaf and the Blind.
Was it then? They have deaf kids then?
Yeah.
It's your blind school. There were deaf children.
Yeah, separate departments.
Well, you know, they did it in Texas, and the old joke has always been the deaf kids and the blind kids were down in the gym fighting, and the deaf kids left. That's always been the joke that we, of course.
I love it.
They separated the blind and deaf in Texas, but in Virginia they didn't. They all.
Oh no, we were separated. They were two separate departments,
okay.
But they were the same school. Still yeah. are, for that matter. In fact, I saw the superintendent at a meeting this morning.
Now, the sister of yours taught you Braille before you went to school.
Yep, I went to school. I was six in December. And I went to school the 1st of January, and she had taught me Braille. She taught me many, many things. We would have school. We would have a little desk, and she would be the teacher, and I would be the pupil.
So a little play school.
Yeah, a little, but I was learning.
But you were learning, you learned, and she
I
had
was learning Braille.
She had gone to the school for the blind and already learned some Braille.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. She was an avid reader. Mm-hmm. She would read to me long before I ever went to school. We would read books together, and of course then after I learned to read, we would take turns reading to each other.
Now, this was a residential school. Did you stay there?
Yes, it still is.
So even though your parents moved
closer. Yes, we still stayed. Now, today, because of a space limitation, if the child lives close enough, they must be a day student. Incidentally, I taught there. I taught music and Braille and technology. My classroom was the room that was my first grade room when I was a student.
Oh, you went back and taught there.
Yes, I taught there. I was there I don't know, about 5 years, just recently, as a matter of fact. So someone said, what does it feel like? And I said, well, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to meet myself someplace.
I like it.
Thank goodness I never did.
So you went all the way through your 12 grades there at the Virginia school, a residential school, two or three to a room.
Oh, my goodness. Now, the last few years, there were four of us to a room. But
okay.
In the early years, there were loads of us to a room. Not much fun.
So, but the school was a good experience for you. You enjoyed it.
I felt it was a good experience. I really and truly do. I think, now I'm not saying anything for or against the schools or for or against mainstreaming, but I think a residential school is a good experience for kids. I'm not saying that they should go all the way through. I'm not saying they shouldn't. But I think it's a good experience because I think that they need that give and take among their peers.
We discuss this every week on this little show, and I still have no conclusion. We've talked with people who went through completely through public school that just seems so well adjusted, and then we've talked with people like you who went to a blind school that also seem well grounded in a world, like it or not, of sighted people.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Don't you think that perhaps if I had gone to public school, I would be just as, shall we say, well-grounded? In other words, what I think I'm saying is it depends on the person.
It does. It depends on the person. I was biased heavily before I started doing this thing by my experience at a blind school, which was less than satisfactory.
Mine was a very good experience. I had really, really good teachers. And I think that for the most part, the children who are there now, of course, it's an entirely different kind of situation because many of the children have other disabilities as well as their blindness.
Yeah, that's what blind schools are now. They're multi-handicapped.
So that, although I had some really sharp kids who had no other disabilities other than their blindness. I had one boy who won a literary contest 2 years running against all the schools in the area.
And at this blind school, of course, they started you on piano at an early age, right?
I started in the second grade. And I learned Braille music.
Learned to read Braille music and learned to started taking a piano. And eventually that wound up being what you did. Eventually that wound up being...
One of this. Ouch! I just hit my hand on the desk. I thought you'd wonder
anymore.
What that crash was.
Don't do that anymore.
one of the things I do, yes, I enjoy music.
Yeah.
And I have a precious little girl that I'm teaching, little student that I'm teaching. She goes to public school. Lovely little girl. But she's going to learn Braille music. And I have also, and this I think you'll find interesting, I have also been recently contacted to teach two college students Braille music because they're going into a music curriculum at a university, two different universities, incidentally, and the university requires that they learn Braille music, and they had not learned it. They went to public school. Well, now, one of them went to a school for the blind. I almost lied there. But she had not been taught Braille music.
Well, it's amazing that they, because they started, I took some piano, and they started teaching me Braille music.
Well, the school for the blind here, after I left, they're not teaching Braille music.
Well, in order to go to music, to college, you have to know music.
You surely do.
You have to.
And so I taught one this summer. And I'm going tomorrow afternoon to start teaching another, and Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired has asked me about teaching a young man who is still in high school going to the public schools who is thinking about majoring in music, and he has not learned Braille music, so I will be teaching him.
Well, I guess in high school you said you sang, so you probably had a glee club.
We had chorus. We had a wonderful chorus. We learned Messiah music, and, of course, we learned show tunes.
Sure.
You know, it's a grand night for singing and this kind of thing. We had excellent teachers. I took piano and organ and voice. And chorus.
And about the time we were growing up, that wonderful movie, Oklahoma, came and gave us so many songs to sing. So much music came out of that.
When I taught at the Virginia School, I insisted that the children listen to music of that kind. I allowed them to bring their favorite CDs or whatever, and once a week we had a day that they could bring. I assigned a child each week, and they would bring in what they liked. But the catch was they had to tell me why they liked it. They could not say, it sends me. they had to say why they liked it. And then I don't mean we picked it apart in a derogatory sort of way, but we picked it apart and we talked about it. Provided we could understand what the words were.
So you wanted music that had some aesthetic value besides just having a good beat and
love. Yeah, but if they brought something in and they said they liked it, I said, okay, from a music standpoint, why do you like this piece of music that you brought in? And it was, of course, the things that the kids listened to in the dorm, But if they brought it in and played it, they had to discuss it from a musical standpoint. I was a mean old thing.
Oh, well, that's good. That doesn't sound too mean to me. I might have thought it was mean when I was 14 years old, but that really sounds like a good way to teach or a good way to,
Well, but look at it this way. I maybe learned some things because I really listened, and I said, you listen to what I want you to listen to, and I will therefore listen to what you want me to listen to. Well, and if for no other reason, it helped to cement my rapport with the students.
Well, obviously, you have some place in your heart for country music, or you wouldn't. Which is, of course, is my I made a living singing country music for lots and lots and lots.
Did you really?
Yeah, and worked on the radio as a country DJ for. If it was a country record between 1943 and 1983, I know about it.
Do you know that I had a student when I was at the school, kid? Well, let's see. Mac is 21 now. Well, he was in his mid-teens. And anything you wanted to know about classic country, that kid could answer it.
Really?
I have more than once yelled from one end of the hall, Mac, I need to see you a minute. And all the other kids would say, what have you done now? And I'd say, he hasn't done anything. But he would always know that I had been trying to think who made what this thing popular. And he'd always know.
Now, do you have some contact information for him?
Yes, I do. I can't get it to you. Let me see. What is his
email?
You can
email me.
I email you?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Look, I email the kid every day, but I just do it, you know, from my address book.
Yeah, it just go to his address. But I'd like for him to do this show with me since we have a common interest.
Listen, he would love it because he's in college now. He really wants to go into radio.
Well, I can talk to him about that. It's radio's not like it used to be.
He knows that, but he wants to do some sort of communications. And he is he's a special kid.
I might be able to steer him onto some things. He might be able to get a job as a board operator at a station, or he might learn to do voiceover, or telling.
He would be satisfied with that. It's the same thing that all of us are facing these days, is finding a job.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went to a little station and bought my way into radio. I bought a couple hours a week and got so in debt to them. This is true that they had to put me on the payroll to get the money back.
To get their money.
That absolutely happened, and I stayed there 8 years, became program director, worked there for a long time.
You sound like a friend of ours, Ray Hauser, who is in my book. Ray has been in radio since the 40s.
Well, we'll need his address, too.
He would love. Now, I'll get all that, too. Would not be a good idea to tell everybody how to get in touch with Ray and Mac.
We won't, but we'll when we get through here, I'll give you email from email address. Are you carrying one of those little pocket recorders yet? Have you done that?
There's one here sitting here on my desk that belongs to someone. I'm doing a true crime book right now. And the brother of the victim has given me some information, and I said, I don't have one of those dinky little things. And he brought, I think he must have had an extra one, because when he brought me the information, he handed me the recorder.
Yeah, I got one I carry in my pocket. I don't know how to live with that. If somebody wants to give me a phone number, I don't have to, I don't have to get to. Could you write this down for me? I can do it on my recorder and then transfer it to my computer.
Right. Well, anyway. I have a type and speak. It's not
That'll
on
work.
My desk right now. Yeah. It's in my briefcase.
Well, let's get back into your life now. You obviously went to college and got yourself a degree when you got out of the blind school. Tell us about that.
I went, there's not anything to tell about that, really. I had difficulty, like everyone else, finding a job, and then I started to write, and then I got married, and then I have done a lot of volunteer work. When I couldn't find something that paid me, I did it for nothing.
But you did you go to a music school?
I took music in college, but I did not. I majored in counseling.
I majored in counseling, but you took them as a minor in music?
Yes,
or
yes.
But you, what did you think? They thought you might want to be a school counselor or what?
Well, I was what I really wanted to do was I wanted to major in journalism with a minor in music, and I was discouraged completely by my rehab counselor. He said, no, take counseling courses so you can be a rehab teacher.
Discouraged you from taking journalism?
Yes, he said, you won't make any money. And it's just something, you know, that today I just don't even like to think about, because you can't help thinking. He said music and journalism, they're not anything practical to do, to think of making any money. And by goodness, they're the only things I've ever really...
That have made you any money.
That because it's something I really don't even like to think about, because I guess things happen the way they're supposed to happen. And at my age, there isn't a frazzling thing I can do about
there
it.
There wouldn't be anything you could do about it at 22, except take the journalism against his advice, which I'm surprised you didn't do.
Well, I couldn't do it because they were paying for it.
So you had to do what they told you to do.
Well, you know, maybe we better not get into it.
Okay. I understand commissions as well as anybody. I've dealt with them.
Yep.
And when I finally decided to buy me a computer, they decided they'd buy me one. But that's been several years ago.
Yeah, well, they bought me my first one. And, they've been very good about buying equipment that I might need. And I've done tutoring for them, technology.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't, well, perhaps I shouldn't say it, but my early experience with them was not a very happy one. Also, I have recently started working part-time for a center for independent living as a youth transition specialist. And I'm sort of hoping that maybe I can help some of these young disabled kids, both visually impaired and other disabilities, to avoid some of the problems that came up for me when I was their age.
That's very good. I'm sure you can. But, you know, I think the attitude of people who commissions and things like that who serve the blind has changed a lot also.
It has. It has. It really has. You know, I say that a lot of times I think professionals, at least this is true in Work for the Blind, so many professionals, and I'm not particularly talking about anyone that I know now, I'm just looking back, is they fell into two categories, the teachers and the taught.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you weren't a rehab teacher or a rehab counselor and you were blind, you were the taught. In other words, you just weren't quite an equal, if that makes sense.
Now, you weren't quite an equal in what would it... I don't know what I mean.
I feel that if you were someone who was working in their agency,
mm-hmm,
and you were blind, okay.
You were right. That was fine.
Right. But if you were a client, okay, they knew where to put you. But if you were you or me working someplace else, I think a lot of workers 30 years ago didn't quite realize that there were people who weren't workers for the blind or who weren't clients. Now, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. It does. I think a lot more back then. Also, they you could do certain things. You could tune pianos. You could cane
mm-hmm,
chairs.
Mm-hmm.
You could sell brooms. But as far as swinging out and doing something that blind people don't normally do, they were very much against that.
They didn't know what to do with you.
They didn't want you to be a writer because no blind person had ever done that,
uh-huh,
so it
right.
couldn't be
exactly.
done.
Exactly.
It couldn't be done now. With the advent of computers, I think a lot of doors for blind folks have been opened.
That would not have been.
Let's take just a short break and come back, and I want to talk about your working days and the different and jobs you've had and things you've done in your life. Phyllis Campbell is our guest, and we'll be back in just a second with more of Blind Like Me.
A website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Today I'm going to go back to a website that I reviewed all the way back in Blind Sight number 12, because going back I discovered that I'd gotten the URL wrong. This is the Weather Underground Braille page. This is for all you weather junkies who want to find out what the weather is in your city, want to track hurricanes, tornadoes, storms, want to find out the temperature, anything you want to find out about the weather in your area, or any area all over the world, as a matter of fact. It's a very accessible web page. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. And the website again, this time correctly. And let me double check this. It's http://braille.wonderground.com/. I'll give that again. http://braille.wonderground.com/. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
Almost.
And so you taught at the blind school, and you never did teach in public school though.
No, I've never taught in public school. I have done workshops, writing workshops with sighted kids, but I've never taught in the school system.
Writing workshops with sighted kids.
Yes. Oh, that's fun.
Well, how would you read what they'd written? Would be the first thing.
These were short workshops where they more or less listened to me and did their own little projects and then shared with the whole group.
Okay, and I guess if they wrote something and you wanted it read, they could read it.
They read it to the whole group. And one of their projects at the Department of Parks and Recreation, I did a 2-week program with them. We wrote a story, all of us together, with everybody sort of doing like a think tank. And then we wrote the story. And that was fun. That was loads of fun.
Now, you collectively, someone came up with a theme or an idea for the story, mm-hmm. and you all contributed.
And I had my type and speak and took the ideas, and then we all worked on how we were going to put it together. And at the end, I brought it home and got body and soul together and did copies so that each kid had a copy to take home.
A full copy of the mm-hmm. whole story. Mm-hmm. Now, this was volunteer work for kids who wanted to be...
Well, actually, it wasn't volunteer. This was the Department of Parks and Recreation for their summer program, and they paid people who were professionals in their field to do... someone else may have had cooking or something else, and I had the writing.
But you were lucky enough in that situation to have all of the kids that you had wanted to take this. They were there because they wanted to be.
They were there because they wanted to be.
Yeah, that would make a whole lot of difference.
That makes a big difference. Sure, I also taught under the same situation. I also taught a couple of adult workshops the same way, except, of course, they did their assignments and they did theirs on the computer. And if they actually wanted me to see it, they would bring me a disc.
Okay, and you could put it in and Jaws would read it to you.
Right,
whatever,
I don't
window
use Jaws.
Eyes or whatever.
I use Window Eyes.
You use Window Eyes.
Yeah.
You could read it with it on their from their disc.
Mm-hmm.
Now you taught at the blind school for 5 years. You said
right.
You didn't choose to make that a long term career. Or you
well, I'll have to be frank with you. The Department of Education said you're not a certified teacher. You can't teach here anymore.
Okay, all right.
I wasn't going to get into that.
Well, that happens. They can give you special dispensation, and obviously they did. You did it for 5 years.
Yeah, well, see, that's what was sort of disturbing was because they hired me and they said, what you're teaching, they don't get credit for anyway. But then DOE had just decided they found someone in another school who wasn't certified, and I think what they did, they just did a blanket. If this person isn't certified, zap. So when I left there, I took a job as a church organist, which I still have. I went into the tutor program through the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired, and I still do that when I'm needed. That has slowed down because of funds. And as I said, I recently started working for Valley Associates for Independent Living.
Now, did you did not have children? You did? Or,
no, I don't.
You did not have children?
No children.
And your husband is sighted or not?
Yes.
He is perfect. He drives a car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so does my wife. We wouldn't get driven if she didn't.
No, I don't think we would either. I keep trying to get him to let me drive the car, but he won't.
There wouldn't be much driving done around here if it wasn't for her. And you got married, you've been married to the same man all this time?
Yes, I have.
That's wonderful.
Yes,
how many,
I have.
How many
we've
years?
Been married, but let's see, we were married in 67.
In what, 67?
Mm-hmm.
So it's bordering on 40 years, about 37 years.
37.
Oh, that's good. I admire you. Now, what else did you do? Did you teach some piano from your home?
I'm teaching piano from my home now. I have also worked as a volunteer in senior centers organizing special groups for the visually impaired. And I did counseling through one of our local banks. The trust department needed someone to do sort of peer counseling with a very wealthy lady, wonderful, beautiful person who had lost her sight and needed some help. And I went to her every day for 3 or 4 years. And I also did peer counseling and taught Braille under contract to the Virginia Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired. And what else have I done? One of our local ballet academies.
Oh, yeah, and you learned all the things that you do, that you have to know about ballet to do that.
Well, she told me what she wanted, and a lot of times I would just write little ditty music for the various routines that she would teach. She told me exactly what rhythm she wanted and what speed she wanted, and I would come up with what she needed.
Well, it sounds like you've kept busy. You have it between writing books and teaching, and it sounds like you've had a pretty busy life.
I have, and I've had a good life.
And are still having a busy life.
I've had a good life, and I'm having a good life.
What are you working on now as far as books?
I'm doing a true crime book. Local crime. This man was murdered in his van. He was sleeping in his van by a lake. So he could get up early the next morning and fish, and someone came and shot him 6 times and then tried to burn the van to cover up what they had done. And it took, 7 years for them to find him, but his twin brother persevered. His twin brother and his lovely mother, who is a lady in a wheelchair, they persevered. His brother, I don't think, would have ever found any peace, because to lose a twin is such a traumatic experience.
Oh, yeah.
So he wanted the book written, but he is not a writer. And he said, will you write it? And he has commissioned me to write it. Then he will send it around to publishers and hope hopefully he'll get a sale.
Now, they know now who committed the crime.
Yes, they know now who committed it. He was sentenced to life in prison without a chance of parole.
What was his motive for killing this man? Just a random act of violence.
He just saw the van there. He went down, saw the man, and shot him.
Just a random act of violence.
Just a random act, and there was quite a bit of confusion because there were people seemingly who had motives, and it was very difficult for the sheriff's department and the FBI because it happened on federal property. It was in the George Washington National Forest. So, but that's the writing project I'm working on right now. I do have a book out to an agent. I don't know whether she's going to agree to represent me or not. If she doesn't, then I will attempt to market myself. Marketing is a big problem for anybody, but it's a dreadful trauma for blind people.
It would be. But with your success, it looks like you'd be able to find somebody to.
It's very hard for anyone. I think eventually I will find an agent. And oddly enough, this woman who has my book went to the same college I did. We didn't go at the same time, but we both went to the same college. And this agency has people in several different states, and she is here in Virginia, in Northern Virginia. She's a writer herself, so we're hoping.
I write songs, and some of them I've written are actually pretty good. I haven't written a hit. There's no question in my mind. I haven't written a Help Me Make It Through the Night or a Nightlife.
Right.
But it would be, and I've never had this done, it would be immensely satisfying for some major country artist to do one of my songs. I have not had that thrill yet.
But, oh, that would be such a thrill.
Oh, it would be like you and your books. You've had that thrill.
And there's nothing like it. I will never write a bestseller. I don't believe I will. I would astound myself if I did. But it's the thrill of knowing that you have written something that others will enjoy.
Yeah, the public at large is enjoying something you've slaved over.
And in my case, that the sighted public may have some insight into what blindness is like.
Yeah, that would be nice. If the sighted public understood blind people a little better.
It would be. And apparently some people did like it. I did not make a fortune on either book, but I mean, people are buying them.
Now before we're getting close to the end here, let's give the names of them again. You don't happen to have the number, the RC, whatever they
are? No, I don't. The fiction one is Come Home, My Heart. And it has been done both in Braille and on cassette.
Come Home, My Heart.
Come Home, My Heart.
Okay.
And the other one is Friendships in the Dark, and it too is in NLS, and I got to give them a plug. If anyone is interested in buying a copy in large print, they are available through Thorndike Press. Go to your local bookstore or go on Amazon, and you can buy both of them. I think are still probably, well, I don't think Come Home, My Heart is still available in paperback, but I believe that Friendships in the Dark is still available through St. Martin's Press. You can go here again. You can go on Amazon or get your bookstore to check. I can't help giving a nice little plug to them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Amazon is such an easy thing to place to order.
Yes, it is.
I don't know how friendly their blind-friendly their website is, but my wife, we get...
They're relatively blind-friendly, I think. People have written reviews of my books, and you can just go on and do a search for Phyllis Campbell.
Yeah, just type in your name, and mm-hmm. it'll show you everything.
If you should want, if anyone should want to give them as a gift, the paperback is not extremely expensive. I think that the large print is expensive. I'm sorry, but I do.
Large print, all large print books are expensive.
But if anyone wants large print, they're available.
All right. Well, I'm going to go call my library in order and read both books.
Well, I hope you enjoy them.
I should have done that before I interviewed you, shouldn't I?
Yes, you certainly should.
Well, I didn't. I saw your name. Dale had sent me your name a couple of months ago and said this lady would really be a good interview for you. And I put it in my, I have a little file in my computer called Guests. And I get somebody, two or three people a month will write me and say, I'd like to do this Blind Like Me. So you just kind of take them in order. So, and I knew that you'd written a couple books, but I will read them, and I'll know about them next time we talk.
Oh, I hope we talk again.
Well, we will, and you've been a delightful guest.
Thank you.
You seem to just be bubbling over with energy, and you aren't a bit bitter or unhappy about anything, or you don't seem to be. And I admire you have a good attitude. You give blind people a good name.
Gee, thanks. That's the nicest thing that's been said to me, certainly today.
Certainly today, huh?
Certainly today.
Well, now, the day's not over, Phyllis. You never know. Listen, thanks much, and hold on just a second, okay?
Thank you.
Let me mention again that I've had a loss of my guest file, which contains all the people that had written me and wanted to be guests on Blind Like Me. If you had done that, please re-email me, phil@philpar.net, phil@philpar.net, or philpar@consolidated.net, and let me know if you think you'd enjoy doing the program. And it's very easy to do. We put no pressure on anybody, and we're not trying to insult anybody or reveal any personal facts about anyone. We just want to do this so that anyone who loses their sight will know or realize or understand that while it is a difficult thing to do, it certainly can be done. You can live a perfectly nice, happy life as a blind person. I've done it. Many, many, many of you have also. So anyway, phil@philpar.net. Come and help us out. Be a guest on the show, and we'd love for you to do that. We'll try to come up with some interviews for next week. I have some folks in the guest list. Thought I had an interview ready to go yesterday, and the guy backed out on me on Monday morning. And so that left me kind of scrounging around, and I thought, well, no, we'll just this week we'll just run this little show. And Phyllis certainly seems like a sweet lady. Never met her in person, but she certainly seems like a nice, gentle soul. I'm going to go read her books. I still haven't done that, and it's been 2 years. Don't forget about our gathering in Houston. Hope you'll come and see us. I'm Phil Parr, phil@philpar.net. Email me and do the show with me. Thank you much, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.